Welcome to the podcast of this Brecan information session. Information sessions are recorded at the Brecan Resource Centre and can be borrowed in CD format from the Resource Library. Sessions are copyrighted and are for personal home use only. If you would like to know more about this and other sessions, please contact Brecan on 1300 781 500. We hope you enjoy this podcast.
This session was recorded on the 5th of June 2013 at the Brecan Resource Centre located in Melbourne CBD. In this session, Ingrid Mitten, a continence and women's health physiotherapist, discusses the practical management of continence, including understanding your body and the effects of cancer treatment, hormonal changes and early menopause. We hope you find this session informative.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Ingrid Mitten. I'm a continence and women's health physiotherapist. I think I've been working for about 100 years. most of that work has been in continence and women's health, which I really enjoy. It's a very rewarding area because I think that this is a problem that a lot of people think about, a lot of people worry about. They might see a family of relatives having problems as they age, not having problems themselves. All of a sudden they're thrown into a situation where they start to develop problems and they start to become medical. So a lot of people are aware of incontinence as an issue, but until it becomes relevant to them, they don't really do anything about it. You know what I'm saying? And of course, one of those relevances is when we and particularly cancer treatment, guiding cancer, which pretty much rearranges your internal organs, and breast cancer with the associated side effects of chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and anti-estrogen therapy makes you much more vulnerable. Now, just looking around at you all, I think we're all on the wrong side of menopause of 50, or thereabouts. And that brings its own problems, regardless of illness or surgery. And so I'll address a lot of these issues in general, and then we can look at the specifics and give you more current issues, and we'll address those at the same time. Okay? So, do we have anybody under 50 here? No? Okay. Alright, now, let's start off with continence itself. Continence being a positive term, incontinence being the negative term. We're all born incontinent. As babies, we don't have bladder or bowel control. We live in nappies for a certain length of time, and depending on how quickly we attain a voluntary control over our pelvic organs, depends when those come off and start using voluntary control and using the toilet at an appropriate place and an appropriate time. So that's something that we learn. As we go through our lifespan, different things happen. We go through puberty, suddenly we start getting periods, and suddenly we start using pads, tampons, and suddenly there are things leaking out of our bodies that can be quite uncomfortable, and we come to terms with that. We then, most of us, will then perhaps go through childbirth, whether it's pregnancy and childbirth, whether it's vaginal delivery or a cesarean section, and things start to change at that point in time. We may not be aware of it at the time, but our bodies are stretched in different places, particularly in the pelvis and the abdominal wall. A lot of the reflex activity that controls our pelvic organs starts to disappear. And with each consequent pregnancy, as I said, it doesn't matter what the moment of delivery is, whether it's a vaginal or a cesarean, there is an impact on our pelvic organs control. So, somebody will suddenly find that they have issues immediately after childbirth. They might have leakage, they might have an inability to hold on when they need to go to the toilet, they might have bowel problems, loss of control over the platelets, or there is an urgency with their bowels, they can't go too far away from the toilet. These things often resolve, but in some, a small number of cases, they don't, and they will go on to cause long-term problems, a very small number. Okay, so we go through life and we bring up our families, we lift heavy children, we lift suitcases and school bags, we dig in the garden, we go to the supermarket, we lift a washing basket. Sometimes we catch all the colds the kids give us and we cough and cough and cough, and then all of a sudden, oops, we might be leaking a little bit. This is a bit of a problem, but the cold goes away and so does the leakage. Out of sight, out of mind for the time being. Until it starts happening on a more regular basis. Or you start needing to go to the toilet more frequently, or you might notice a little bit of a bulge in the vagina that didn't used to be there. It's an uncomfortable feeling, it's just like a golf ball. Whoops! Something's going south and shouldn't be. So these things are part of the process of going through life for women, unfortunately. Once we get to round about age 50, menopause starts to become an issue. About 5 years before or after you start feeling the signs, your body will start to reach the last of your seemingly never-ending supply of eggs from the ovaries. They disappear and so does the estrogen in your body. Now, when you lose your estrogen, you lose a lot of the strength and the resilience in your body. That's what estrogen does. It's a lovely hormone, and it keeps us looking young, keeps the wrinkles away for a while, it holds the breasts up, it also holds up our pelvic organs and helps to support them. The ligaments that hold our pelvic organs in place inside the pelvis are very susceptible to estrogen, and it makes them resilient, elastic, and they rebound. When we cough or sneeze, they tend to come back up again. But when we lose that estrogen, you certainly notice the effects of that. We can see it when we look in the mirror, but we can also feel it, because sometimes things feel lower inside. And that's often when there are signs of prolapse, when one or other of your three pelvic organs, the bladder, the uterus, or the bowel, start to sag a little bit. It's like the guy ropes on a tent are giving way, and those organs start to move downwards in the vagina, and that's what we call pelvic organ prolapse. That may or may not be associated with symptoms. Sometimes it is. Sometimes there's urgency and frequency when you need to empty your bladder. Sometimes it's if it's the back wall of the vagina, it's a difficulty emptying your bowel. You may feel a bulge there that doesn't want to empty properly, or there may be a hard lump in the vagina, which is the cervix moving downwards towards the entrance. Now, the reason if they move downwards is because everything's relative to gravity. Gravity, unfortunately, is our worst enemy. If we were still on all fours, as nature probably intended us to be, we wouldn't have a problem with gravity. But because we're standing upright, our pelvic floor and our pelvic organs are under the heaviest part of our body, and therefore the effects of gravity are going to be much more obvious to us. So, over a lifetime of working hard, bringing up children, or just enjoying life, whatever you're doing between, say, age 20 and 50, you've done a lot of possible damage to your pelvic organ support without even realising it. And so when you go through menopause, it unmasks a lot of those issues that have gone on before. So that's why things happen after that estrogen disappears. Now, for women who have had cancer, who have had a gynae cancer or breast cancer, it's usually associated with hormones. And if this happens before you go through menopause, then you suddenly plunge into a chemical menopause that is very, very similar to a natural menopause that you'll go through. And therefore you suffer the same problems of that unmasking of any support issues inside your pelvis at the time. Now, you can have a prolapse without having any other issues. It doesn't necessarily go together. You can have strong pelvic floor muscles, but you may still leak. This is a very complicated area of your body. And so in order to work out what sort of a problem you have, you really need to have it adequately assessed to determine what the best mode of action is. These things are never just a simple one-stop answer. There are a lot of things contributing to any issues that you might have with either pelvic organ prolapse, urinary issues or bowel issues, and they all need to be addressed at the same time to get the good outcome. So you need to understand your body, and what I do with people is an awful lot of talking when I see them, because we can just sit and, you know, not even get to look at that pelvic floor in one session because we're so busy dealing with all of the side issues, which are all having a little bit of an effect, and just that layering effect is what is causing you to have symptoms. So you might have lost your estrogen, if you might have had some problems with a difficult childhood, you may have chronic cough, asthma or hay fever, you might be an avid gardener and you're out there throwing pods of soil around and lifting up heavy bags of potting mix and moving the compost from one end of the garden to the other, or carrying buckets of water around because it's been dry. All of those things are going to affect what happens in your pelvis as well. So, can I be cheeky and ask you, if you have had any problems, are you going to tell me? Because the statistics tell me that 1 in 4 Australians will have an issue, and that's from 1 in 3 women. It's distressing, isn't it?
It is. And we started using those little wax pads.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it gives you social confidence. So yeah. You can go out and think, well, if I do have a bit of leakage, I'm not going to have to wear a jumper around the waist.
No,
and go home
no, no, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm very aware of it.
Okay.
And also when I'm at morphing,
yes,
sometimes I'm a long way from home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do? You cut your walk short?
I have done that.
Exactly. Yes, or you start looking for the toilet.
Yeah.
I won't go there because I don't remember seeing a toilet in saying that, the Continence Foundation has actually put out a toilet map. So, for exactly that reason, and that's available to anybody that wants it. So, if you're going anywhere in Australia, you can find out where each of the toilet is, which can be quite handy if you're
if you've got a problem.
That's right. Yes. Now, well, I'll say yes. When I had my first child, I was running around the park with the kite. But there are other things following me, not just the kite. And that gave me a bit of a fright, because I was actually leaking at that stage. 3 big babies, and I thought, well, this is not good. So, need to do something about that. And I've managed that just with exercise throughout my life. I'm avoiding going near a surgeon. But exercise has been enough for me to keep that under control. But won't retire me if I get a really bad cold, you know, the flu. I just died before getting the flu. And I will stay like anybody that's sick. But being a physio, people do come to me and they say, oh, stay away from work today because you're not well. Well, thank you. that can be the worst thing for me. Let's deal with the bladder issues first, and then we'll talk about the bowel, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the prolapse symptoms. But, you know, everybody is affected. In some way or other, it might be a big issue, it might be a little issue, it might be the fear of the issue. it's all relevant to all of us, and what we need to do is be proactive about this and see what we can do to help ourselves, first and foremost. And then, if that's not enough, and our quality of life is still not acceptable, then the gynecologist, or the neurogynecologist, can perhaps improve on it. For most of you ladies, estrogen is a no-no because of your cancers, that you can't take estrogen supplements. And estrogen improves the quality of the pelvic organ and organ support. it actually contributes about one third to the closing pressure in the urethra. So if you take out one third of that pressure, you can understand sometimes why when you cough you might lose a little bit of urine, because it's like a store that's opened up and there's nothing there to prevent that urine from coming out. And then add to that anything that's happened in the childbearing years. Maybe that bladder neck is not so close as it used to be, which means that when you cough it opens up a little bit and urine will push down into the urethra. And on top of that, medications or just lack of estrogen can cause the bladder to become irritable as we get older. Now that's very, very obvious to me with the ladies that I see, that if they're particularly in the 60s, I think it seems to get worse. You manage to get through the 50s all right, but when you hit 60, those bladder issues seem to get a lot worse. We're still very active at 60, they still is, and our parents used to be old ladies at 60. We're middle-aged still. We're still actively doing things, and therefore it's more of an imposition on us, rather than sort of being at home in the kitchen and just shuffling around the house. We're out doing things, and this is a nuisance. So that lack of estrogen, we can't do anything about that if it's been related to your cancer. But we can use our pelvic floor muscles more and hope that that increases the blood flow to those tissues around the base of the bladder and the urethra. By exercising your pelvic floor muscles, that will give you something hopefully to hold on with. By increasing the strength of your pelvic floor muscles, by exercising on a regular basis, you then have more blood to hold on to, but you need to use those muscles. And that's the bottom line. Strong muscles are not going to be any good to you if you don't put them to work. Now if we go back to childbirth cancer, when we're pregnant, and this is not relevant to everybody here, anybody here not has children? Right, okay. And that doesn't exempt you, unfortunately. let me mention what happens during childbirth, that your pelvic floor muscles are basically reflex muscles. That means that they come in quickly and strongly when your body needs them. When you sneeze, for instance, or you cough, or you trip on something. When you're younger, those muscles just work. They come in quickly because of the stretch on the internal organs and the tissues within your abdominal wall and the pelvis. And so you don't have to think about them at all. But then you add childbirth, a big tummy, pelvic floor muscles that have been stretched, 9 months of pregnancy, and those little stretch receptors that tell your pelvic floor muscles to work at the right time get stretched out of existence. They don't work anymore. And so you lose that reflex function with your pelvic floor muscles. When you do pelvic floor exercises, that doesn't put the reflex back. It makes the muscles strong, but if you don't use them, they're not going to help you. So what you have to do is do the exercises to strengthen the muscles, but then you need to learn to use them again. So you've got to think about when you do them. You need them when you're standing at the kitchen sink washing your coffee cup. Maybe, good time to practice them. When you cough, when you sneeze. Did you brace your pelvic floor muscles then when you sneezed, Helen?
I've been doing bracing pelvic floor muscles, mm-hmm. exercises, especially in the morning. I yes. found that's helped.
Good. But did you use them when you sneezed?
No, I didn't.
And that's what I mean, that you've got to tell those muscles to pull up, sneeze, and then let them go. Pull up, cough, and then let them go. Pull up, lift up that supermarket shopping, put it in the car, then let them go. Pull up your pelvic floor, lift up the washing basket, walk it out to the line, let it go, and then try and hold those muscles while you're putting the things on the line. When you're pushing that supermarket trolley around, I see women leaning on that supermarket trolley, you know what I mean? They lean on it like that, and their bottoms wiggle from side to side because that's where they're getting their steering from. Nothing's happening up here, because they're just using it like a crouch. And, of course, their pelvic floor muscles aren't working at all. Our muscles are working above their hips. And so they haven't got any protection if something happens, if they cobble sneeze. So muscles are in your body to support things. It's either joints, or it's pelvic organs, or things that you cannot see. If you don't use them, they don't help you. So you have to start putting these things to work. You need to brace your muscles. And if you pull them up at the right time, they may prevent the leakage. They may reduce the leakage. Hopefully, if they're strong enough, they will have some effect. I can't guarantee it, but if you're not doing it, then you've got nothing to lose if you try. I'll run through some pelvic floor exercises at the end of the session. So, that's what we call stress incontinence, is when you lose urine, when you increase the pressures from above, gravitation increases, tightening the stomach muscles, pushing down on the bladder, and it pushes the urine out. That's the stress, is an increase in gravity. And you need to meet that stress by bracing the muscles at the same time. Now, urgency and urge urine incontinence is a different matter altogether. That comes from the bladder itself. When the bladder is irritable, it's overactive for some reason, it might be due to a long-term lack of estrogen, it might be due to too much caffeine, because caffeine is a smooth muscle stimulant, and when you drink a lot of caffeine, your bladder, which is made of smooth muscle, it's like a little football, though. It's in the inside of a football. It gets a bit irritable and a bit jumpy, so the slightest little thing will trigger it off and it will squeeze. And that's what happens when you sometimes, if you've been sitting watching television for a while and you get up, the change of position is likely to trigger off a bladder contraction, that really strong urge to empty your bladder. And you think, oh my God, I can't move, I'm stuck here, I'm going to leak. Sit down again. Sit down and squeeze out as hard as you possibly can and try and get it under control and then try again. But that's what's happening, is that your bladder is generating that squeeze and so forth. There are other things that will trigger off a bladder contraction. And that's one of the things that is a trigger. It might be running water. If you've got extreme urgency, just walking past a running fountain. Avoid the fountain. Turning the tap on to wash the vegetables when you're getting dinner ready. How many women have I spoken to say, I'm just trying to
finish this.
Yeah. And I've got to stop and rush off to the toilet or have an accident. And it's not that your bladder is full, it's just that the running water is sending a subconscious message to that bladder and saying, why do you go? Squeeze. And if you get that under control, make it go away, it does go away, because it's not a full bladder that's saying you need to go to the toilet, it's something from outside telling it. Now, if you've got a lot of caffeine on board as well, those triggers will make that urge much worse. So my advice is reduce your caffeine intake.
Is it caffeine?
Yes. Coffee substitutes are good. We can also get decaf coffee. We are the coffee capital of the world here. Mm-hmm. And any coffee bar that you go into in the city will have decaf coffee. Tea or coffee has a similar effect on an irritable bladder, and it's not the cause of the irritability, it's the thing that tips you over the edge. So what you do if you are going out or if you're not sleeping at night is stay away from caffeine, because it will make everything worse. And for me personally, the cause, one of the problems is poor sleeping. There are very few women that can drink coffee and go to bed at night and sleep.
Try.
What you have to do is look at the packet, because you need to read the ingredients. If it says black tea leaves, don't touch it.
No.
So if it's, even green tea has enough caffeine in it to make your bladder a little bit irritable if you're very sensitive to it, I would go completely caffeine free if you have an irritable bladder, and particularly in the evenings. I mean, you could maybe cope with one cup of coffee first thing in the morning. But I would say try and avoid it after about There are some quite nice low-caffeine teas that you could think about. Madura, does anybody know Madura tea?
Yeah, there's rooibos as well.
Yes, that's right.
The South African one.
Yes.
Red tea.
I think that's a no-caffeine tea, is that rooibos?
I think so.
But
it's not made of tea.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And Madura tea is 97% low-caffeine. They don't decaffeinate, they pick the tea leaves early, so they don't have as much caffeine in it. So, you know, if you're a tea drinker, maybe change the brand of tea that you're drinking. It might be a little bit more expensive, but you won't drink as much of it. And it tastes quite nice. It hasn't got a strong flavour, but it's a good alternative if you're caffeine sensitive. When you go out for a coffee with the girls, ask for a decaf. Even the young girls drink decaf these days, and it's a fashion. Ask for decaf. So, you know, it's not anything to be embarrassed about to ask for decaf. Just make sure that it mix it up with the caffeinated one that you give them a friend. they put marks on them. So, the caffeine, yes, be careful of the caffeine because it will upset your day if you drink it when you're very sensitive to it. Particularly if you're going on a long trip, like driving up to the farm. Don't have a tea or coffee before you leave, have one when you get there instead, if you're going to be sitting for a long period of time. Okay, so urinary incontinence. It can give you large volume, sudden leakage. Often happens on the doorstep, as someone has experienced, and that's just a subconscious message that your brain is sending. You look at the door, you're not even thinking about it, but you're sending a message to your bladder and saying, this is the door, this is where I really get going. And it squeezes so strongly that sometimes you just cannot get in that door. But what you need to do is, once you do, and getting things under control, learning to use urge control is an important issue here. And what you're doing when you're bending over and touching your toes is that you're putting pressure up against the perineum, that area between your legs, and that pressure is sending messages up your spinal cord and to your bladder and saying, don't squeeze, stop squeezing, relax.
Doesn't
listen
straight away.
And it takes about 10 to 15 seconds of pressure to actually initiate that. And this is what we do with our pelvic floor muscles as well. When we get the urge to empty our bladder, we squeeze up with our pelvic floor if it's not a strong urge. The first urge that you get if you've got a normal bladder that doesn't give you any problems is usually just ignore it and think, I need to go to the toilet but I'll go later. The next time the urge comes, it's stronger. I really need to think about what I'm doing here. I will go soon. Third time, get out of my way. I need to get to the toilet and you're unbuttoning your clothes on the way. If you've got an irritable bladder, that first urge is the one you really have to work at. And this is where pressure, perineal pressure, is important. Now, if there is sitting on a chair, can give you that perineal pressure. You know that when you're sitting down, the urge is never as strong as it is when you're standing up. So you can stay sitting or you can look for a chair to sit on. And at the same time, squeeze up with your pelvic floor muscles, because tightening your muscles and putting pressure on the front of your pelvic floor and the urethra, so if you roll your hips forward and get the pressure right at the front, and squeeze up inside with your muscles and hold them and hold them and hold them for at least 10-15 seconds, then you often will feel the urge starting to pass. If not passing, maybe lessening enough for you to think, okay, I can now move and I can get to that toilet. But the worst thing you can possibly do when you get a very strong urge is to just take off at a gallop to the toilet, because your bladder will win. You've got to get it under control first. Suppress the urge by applying pressure. And I'm sure you've all done this.
Yeah.
Inside the house, right, when there's nobody around. Yeah. Right, it's like pressing a button, isn't it? Yeah. And it gets it under control. But you can't do that out in the street or in the supermarket. So you've got to have other ways of controlling that bladder. And so your pelvic floor muscles are there, and they will, hopefully, if you're strong enough and you can apply enough pressure, maybe help with that. Medication can also help with urgency, and there are medications on the market that will suppress the urge, but as with all medications, they come with side effects, and mostly those side effects are a dry mouth, sometimes headaches and feeling a bit spaced out, and constipation. And none of those side effects are very pleasant. So, I mean, for some people that there are no side effects, they take those medications without any problems whatsoever. And if you have really bad urgency, it's worthwhile trying something like that, but be prepared not to keep using it if the side effects are causing problems.
The pharmacologist suggested patches.
Yes. Yep.
I haven't gone on to that.
Patches are good. Okay. Yes. What he's suggesting is oxytrol patches, which is diptropan in a transdermal application. And they can be quite effective. You know, for a lot of women I see, they can't, the side effects, the oral side effects, the constipation and the dry mouth are just unbearable. But they can tolerate the patches, and sometimes you can even supplement hard. The only problem with patches, sometimes they irritate your skin, so you have to keep moving around to different places. And if you're very sensitive to the adhesive, they might cause some irritation. But they can be very useful.
Because the medication on the dry mouth is so bad that it's virtually impossible to eat it in it.
Right. Yes.
Like the choke.
Yes. That's medication for something else.
Is it? This is the one for the bladder.
Oh, for the bladder. Right. Yes. Yes, well, if you've been offered the patches, I would give them a try because you might find that that's much more acceptable. If you have problems with dry mouth, I'm jumping around all over the place here, but I'm addressing these things as you mention them. If you have dry mouth from medication, there are products that you can buy at the counter. They can sell them in price alone. They're called Bio-10. They have mouthwashes, they have toothpaste, they have chewing gum, and they have an oral gel that helps to lubricate your mouth. So if for any reason you have dry mouth symptoms, there is something you can use for that as well. Okay. Does anybody want to mention anything else about urgency before we So remember, decrease your caffeine, use your pelvic floor muscles for urge control, try and get it under control before you move, and make sure that you keep drinking plenty of fluid too. Strong, concentrated urine will increase urgency. A lot of people think if they've got a leakage problem, either stress incontinence or urgency, maybe if I don't drink as much, the problem won't be as bad. It might be less of a problem with stress incontinence, but it might be more of a problem with urgency. That urine should be nice and light in colour. And like the cupboard said. If it's dark, orange, and it's got a really strong odour, then you're probably not drinking enough. And your fluid intake for good function, and you're all around about the same size, it will take a kilo or two, should be between 1.5 to 2 1.5 to 2 litres a day. And that includes all fluids. Not just water. A lot of people come to me and they're drinking 2 litres of water and then they're drinking 5 cups of coffee and 2 cups of tea. And, you know, you can see the fluid oozing out of their skin. It's about, it's too much. They're making the problem worse. So it's total fluid intake. Milk on cereal, tea, coffee, fizzy drinks, alcohol. Although they can't be alcohol because that's in the diuretic. Like the tea and water. And my suggestion is that if you are drinking tea and coffee, for every cup of coffee you drink, make the next one a large glass of water or have it together. But I think probably it's better to have it in between because that stops you having the next cup of coffee then. So and by the time you get to the end of the day, you've had enough to drink, you're not feeling thirsty. So. A good alternative to tea and coffee too is just plain hot water with a maybe slice of lemon in it. And that's well made. I like it. I drink warm water as opposed to cold water because I don't like cold water. Cold water actually makes me feel quite sick in the stomach. is immediate, but some people prefer it cold to warm. So whatever, cold or warm water or hot water, it doesn't really matter. Whatever suits you, but make sure you bring enough of it, but I advise you do it. If you drink too much, you're washing all the water-soluble vitamins and minerals out of your body because you go to the toilet so often. So you take it in thinking it's good for you, but you're washing it out in the process. So just keep your food intake under control. Okay, so we've got stress and continence under control. We've got the urgency under control. But we still have a prolapse. There is a bulge in the vagina. Right, and that could be the bladder bulging down, or it might be the bowel bulging forward, or it could be the uterus moving down in the middle. Most likely it's the front wall of the back there. The front wall is your bladder, and that will feel sort of soft and pudgy if you push on it. It will be less obvious after you've entered your bladder, but it will probably be there more often if you're doing any heavy work. Being on the feet all day, it will come down. Sometimes they're symptomatic, sometimes they're not. If they come right up through the vagina, they're going to rub on your underwear, and that's going to be uncomfortable. Those tissues are not meant to be outside the vagina. If they're at that stage, they need to be dealt with, and they need to either be supported from the inside with an intra-vaginal device like a pessary, or a surgical solution, which means you need to see a specialist about it. If it's still within the vagina and just feels as if there's something there, and you can do your pelvic floor exercises effectively and draw it up, then you manage it yourself by avoiding heavy lifting, doing your pelvic floor exercises regularly, and then using your pelvic floor muscles when you put any extra pressure on your pelvic organs. When you get out of the chair, when you pick something up, when you cough and sneeze, even if you laugh, that's when I usually notice that they come down the road. Somebody says, I ask them to do a pelvic floor squeeze for me, and then they pull them up, then they laugh, and it all comes down again. So it's a bit tricky trying to hold your pelvic floor muscles tight and laugh at the same time. It's the one thing that makes you relaxed and comfortable, and you pretend not to hold things tight. So, pelvic organ prolapse is more of a nuisance than anything. Some people just live with it and are quite happy to live with it. Some people want it gone and need to do something about it. It's really up to you, so long as it's well contained within the pelvis. If it's the back wall of the vagina, it means that the bowel is pushing forward and forming a little pocket. Now, that is called a rectus seal. The front wall is called a cystus seal. The back wall is called a rectus seal. So, as in rectum, pushing that bowel, and the back wall of the vagina has lost its integrity and is very stretchable, so the bowel is pushing it forward. When you get the urge to empty your bowel, you will often feel a hard lump on the back wall of the vagina, or maybe even bulging down. It's quite easy to recognise because it's hard, it's full of a stool. When you go to the toilet and empty your bowel, then it usually disappears. But if you have good bowel function and you're emptying your bowel on a regular basis, and if that's first thing in the morning, then it shouldn't really give you any problems. It's just that if you have frequency with your bowel motions, and it's continually coming down and filling it up, or you're not emptying that little pocket, then you're going to be uncomfortable for the rest of the day. So my advice, if that is the case, is that you need to look at your diet and make sure that you have an adequate amount of soluble fibre in your diet, which will keep your bowel motion soft and formed. And then when you get the urge to empty your bowel, you go immediately to the toilet. You don't put it off, because putting it off will leave that stool sitting in that little pocket. It will further stretch the walls of that rectum inside. But not just the walls, it also stretches the nerve endings that tell you that it's there. And so continually putting off the urge to empty your bowel will make the rectus seal worse and decrease the urge that you feel that you need to go to the toilet. okay? So don't, when you need to go to the toilet, don't put it off. That's really, really important. When you do go to the toilet, if you feel that it's not empty completely, wrap some toilet paper around your hand, place it, sit on the toilet in the right position, elbows forward on your knees, that's very good. You've been practicing. Wrap some toilet paper around your hand, place it between your legs, and just push up against the bulge, and just give it a little push when your bowel is finished emptying. And that will generally empty out what's in that little bulge, which means that when you get off the toilet, the bowel feels empty. And that's a simple, easy way to manage erectile if you have that problem. If it's got worse than that and the hand pressure doesn't help, you probably need to see someone to have it fixed, sewn up into the back wall. But I would caution people about rushing into surgery for that too quickly. I have heard some awful stories about repairs being done when there's not a lot of control there. Because if things come rushing down from a very narrow control, there's nothing stopping coming out at the wrong time. So you need to have the muscles around your external anal sphincter needs to be strong enough to hold on to get you to the toilet. Now, with fecal urgency, there are many reasons why this might happen. The prolapse generally doesn't give you urgency. It's usually because there's a background of perhaps surgery, radiation therapy, maybe chemotherapy, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, all of those things that are contributing to it as well. Plus the fact that maybe the muscles around the left passage aren't strong or you don't have a lot of feeling there. Lack of feeling is the worst possible thing, because if you can't feel it, you can't hold on to it. So, and that can, that's
Yes.
I don't know. That's often the result of either childbirth or surgery or radiation. The person's nerve endings have been damaged. So nerve endings are damaged, the muscles don't work. You can't feel it there either. So you have to be very good then with routine. And I would suggest that everybody should have a good bowel routine. And if you eat the right amount of soluble fibre. When I say soluble fibre, do you know what I mean?
All bran?
No, all bran is actually wheat fibre, which is insoluble.
Yes. I take psyllium husks.
And psyllium husks, yes.
Very good.
We've got two sorts of fibre. There's soluble fibre and insoluble fibre. The insoluble fibre is the wheat bran, and I think rice bran is pretty insoluble as well. That will make things loose, and if you eat too much of it, quite explosive. I saw a poor man once who had a problem with constipation, and somebody said, now this, you've got to make this little recipe up. And there was a cup of pineapple juice, a cup of unprocessed bran, and something else. Poor man couldn't get off the toilet. He was fecally incontinent. It was dreadful. All he did when he came to see us was change his diet. And he did life back again. So you've got to be careful with some of these things. Too much of a good thing can be worse than a bad thing. So, a little bit. Fibre should be used as supplements only, not as a meal. Soluble fibre is from your rolled oats and barley. And the oat bran is usually milled off the rolled oats, I might say. The oats that you buy, even your porridge, has got very little bran left on it. They put it in a bag and they put the oat bran in a separate bag and sell it separately. Oat bran, I find, is a brilliant soluble fibre. That and psyllium. I tend to go for the oat bran first, it's more like a food. The psyllium second if the oat bran doesn't do the job. So what you want is the soft, formed bowel motion and a feeling of when you need to go to the toilet. If you have got those two things going and you can go and empty your bowel at the right time, preferably in the morning before you have a shower and get dressed, then you can clean up afterwards get dressed, go out for the day, and feel that everything's pretty much under control. Too much fibre will keep going through you. It will stimulate your bowel. Too many nuts and seeds, if you have an irritable bowel, will keep moving things through faster. So I think if you have urgency, you have frequency and loose bowels, the best thing to do is to do yourself a bowel chart with a piece of paper, and for 2 weeks write down everything you eat and drink, and write down the time that you go to the toilet and what the consistency is like. And then you can go back and you can double check. Oh, when I eat fat, I usually have a loose bowel commotion, maybe 2 or 3 a day. That comes out of my diet if I've got something to do the next day. I'm not going to eat that if I'm not going to be at home. So learn what you can eat and what you can't eat. This is all self-management. You're not going to get this if you go to the doctor. He'll give you ammonia to stop your bowel moving. And then you'll get constipated. And then it'll all come out at once at the wrong time. Learn to manage your bowel yourself. Look at what you eat, what the effect is on your bowel, and manage it.
Would it, they sell a lot of bread with seeds and that in it. That's not a good idea.
Well, it depends on your bowel. I would go for a fine wholemeal bread, and not too much in the way of seeds. Avoid nuts and things, because they irritate your bowel, and that's good. If you're constipated, eat those things, it helps to get things moving. Fruits, if you've got irritable bowel, always take the skin off your fruit, because again, it's more roughage that's going to irritate it more. And try and eat most of your fibre first thing in the morning, and try and get that bowel working on a regular basis so that you have a little bit more certainty, rather than continually eating fibre thinking, oh, get it moving, I'll get rid of it. Because you might want to get rid of it at the wrong time, the wrong place, and not be able to hold on to it. Okay? And for those of you, does anybody suffer from constipation? Yes, okay. So you need to work out what sort of fibre you need to get things moving. Try the oat bran. I think it's probably good for everybody.
Just a little bit though.
Start with a teaspoon. You buy it just in a plastic bag where the porridge is in the supermarket. It's not expensive if you buy the no-name brand. If you buy the low ones, you'll pay twice as much for it. And you'll get too much. It doesn't fit in a normal size container. So buy the no-name Remember, you've got this foundation, you don't want extra fibre. But in saying that, loose bowels can sometimes be pulled together with psyllium. Now, the difference between oat bran and psyllium is that psyllium works from either end of the spectrum.
And could you buy that in the same area as
you
the...
You can, yes, in a psyllium hub. Yes. It's the same thing in Metamucil. You can buy the Metamucil if you want. Or you can just put the psyllium in your breakfast cereal.
And it becomes like a jelly.
Yes.
And you put it in.
You have to eat it very quickly. The psyllium husk is the basic ingredient in Metamucil. So you buy the Metamucil, you get the box, the packet, and you also get different flavours, So you can drink it as a drink if you want, or you can just buy a plastic bag of psyllium husk and put that a couple of teaspoons on your breakfast cereal. And that's it, eat it fast. Yeah. A lot of people think if I take psyllium, Metamucil, when I get constipated, that'll fix it. But when you're constipated, that's not what you need. That just sits there, it doesn't go anywhere when you're constipated. You've got to take it all the time to keep things soft and warm so that it keeps moving through. And a lot of people take too much too. They go overboard. Instead of starting small and building up to see what they tolerate, they take too much and find that it has an adverse effect. And so saying, some people will find it irritating to their bowel, so that's where I would try it first to see what it does. And if it has a beneficial effect, that's fine, but if it doesn't, then leave it. Okay? It is individual. On the whole, it will bind things together and keep them soft from either end, too hard or too loose, bring it back to a normal consistency. Oat bran will tend to do the same sort of thing, and it's nice and cheap. You put perhaps a little bit of oat bran into your cereal, see what happens, and then start small, build up, avoid it because it has the wrong effect.
And it lowers cholesterol as well.
It does too, yes. Okay, so any other issues with bowels? No? Does that sort of cover most of your issues? Mm. That's right. Mm. And if you're not sure what's in your bowel, do a bowel chart. Keep it going for about 2 weeks. Have a variety of dinners and things and, you know, get a good handle on your bowel. If your bowel is not like her bowel, no. Not like my bowel. Everybody's bowel is different and you need to learn to read it. You need to learn how to make a potion.
Wind.
Yes. Well, the good news or the bad news? Okay. Everybody has wind. Most people aren't too aware of it. If you have regular bowel function, it will tend to pass the bowel motions. If you get constipated, it will tend to be worse. If you don't have good control over the lower end of your bowel, you can't stop it coming out. And so, that's a situation that can be very embarrassing because it's often a change of position. Getting out of the car and go out with the family.
And the pain associated.
Yes, it can give you a lot of cracks in your tummy. I think sometimes psyllium can make you a bit windy. Usually you get used to it. And that's another reason why I prefer the oat bran to the psyllium, because I don't think it causes as much wind. But again, avoid foods that are obviously going to give you wind. Highly processed foods tend to be worse. Cakes, biscuits, sweet things with lots of sugar in them. And sometimes the really fibrous foods, like the stalks on the broccoli or the cauliflower, things that don't break down until they get to the large bowel, because things stay in the large bowel for longer, they then start to break down and you get more gas production. So again, if you take the skin off your apples and fruit, you'll tend to get a little bit less wind. Again, if you're not sure what the main culprit is, do your bowel chart and have a look, and it will start to become fairly obvious. Usually 1 or 2 days after you've eaten your ending foods, then you'll notice the issues with wind. So that's why vegetarians tend to get more wind. People that eat a lot of fibre, too much fibre, will tend to be more windy than people who eat
too much oat bran.
Possibly.
Yes. So baked beans once a week.
Yes, and not the day of before you're going out.
My concern is everything you're telling me not to have is for the good things that I'm trying to have. For my better health,
and that can be the problem sometimes. Yes. It's a matter of balance, balancing your comfort and the good things that are keeping you healthy. Exactly. Anything that's really high in fibre, if you have an irritable bowel or you have poor outlet control, can be an issue.
Vegetables. I like a lot of vegetables.
Vegetables are good.
I only like vegetables when they're cooked. And I think it doesn't make me feel good,
salad, so it doesn't make me feel good.
Uncooked vegetables, not the greatest.
Cooked vegetables are absolutely essential for bowel function.
Cooked vegetables.
Uncooked ones, it depends on your bowel though.
Right.
If you have a constipation problem, then eat them raw up.
Yes.
And if you have an emergency problem, cook them well and take them. Most of the stalk on, so you're not producing too much wind.
What about
rice? Rice is a resistant starch. It will tend to hold things together. So if you're having loose bowels, I think boiled rice and steamed rice is probably quite a good vegetable with your vegetables with it. Now, I'm not giving you dietary.
No.
Nutritional advice here.
No.
I'm simply talking about stool consistency.
Yes.
And you have to make sure that your diet is well balanced in the context of holding things together.
Yeah, yeah.
so that you're getting adequate nutrition. But there's just a few things that you can think about. That too much fibre can be detrimental, not enough fibre will make you constipated. It's got to be a good balance of everything to keep you comfortable. Okay. Let me just check and see if there's anything I haven't talked about. The sexual function. Okay. Yeah. Might not be for everybody. Not everybody is always sexually active into older age. A lot of people find it's a really important part of their relationship with their partner and want to remain sexually active even if it's not comfortable. And it's important for that closeness. Rather than full-on penetrative sex, there are lots of other ways you can express your sexuality as well. Often the problem after menopause or after chemo or radiation is that the vagina becomes so atrophic, that word means thin and fragile, that any sort of contact is almost unbearable. It's like having a knife stuck in there. And so a lot of women that I see, are you still sexually active?
Oh no.
All that's finished. Trouble is, he still wants to be sexually active, but she's shut up shop. She doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But that is not everybody. Everybody, if you're in a relationship and you wish to remain sexually active, it's got to be reasonably comfortable. And if the vagina is really sore and the walls are thin, and even a little bit of contact causes bleeding and pain, then you're going to get associated tightness in your pelvic floor muscles, which is a protective mechanism, and then that's going to make sex even more uncomfortable. So, you're not, if you've had any sort of cancer that is susceptible to estrogen, you can't use topical estrogen, which is a vaginal cream that's often used for women post-menopause, which makes things easier. You have to rely on learning to relax your pelvic floor muscles and using some sort of a lubricant and moisturiser to make the inside of the vagina more comfortable. Now, I've just found a little study that was done in Sydney by the health physio up there, Sharon Jarvis, who's a dynamo. She's just done a little feasibility study on the use of a vaginal moisturiser, olive oil and pelvic floor exercises aimed at relaxing the pelvic floor muscles. They looked at 25 women because what they found was that about 50% of breast cancer survivors experienced sexual dysfunction and pain in the years afterwards. So the 25 women that were enrolled over 26 weeks, they were shown how to do their pelvic floor exercises and shown how to maximise the relaxation by getting a really strong squeeze and then letting them relax afterwards so they could control what their muscles were doing. They then used a vagina moisturiser by the name of Replens, R-E-P-L-E-N-S, twice a week, which puts a little layer on the inside of the walls of the vagina. Then they used organic olive oil as a lubricant when they're having sex. Now, they found that the best effect was in around about 12 weeks. And there was an improvement between, I think it was about 73 and 92% in different parameters, which made sex more comfortable. So that's an option for you as well. There are things there that you can use. Replens is a vagina moisturiser. It's available over the counter. If you're in difficulty in this area, it's probably worthwhile seeing a women's health physio to check the pelvic floor muscles and make sure that you can actually tighten, but more importantly, relax them at the right time. And the moisturiser should make things more comfortable, the olive oil. It's not like a fish and chip shop afterwards. Doesn't matter, there's always the shower. So that's a possibility as well. But sex can be daunting. And a left part of your life is important in a relationship. Men's libido doesn't drop off the same way that women's libidos do. They still remain sexually active for a lot longer than we feel that we want to. However, as far as sex is concerned, even though you might want to turn over and pretend you've got a headache and etc., etc., once you actually get into it, it's often quite enjoyable, even though the thought of it doesn't really appeal all that much. And the other thing about having reasonably regular sex, now when I'm saying regular sex, I reckon about once every 2 weeks is about enough. but it's a good workout for your pelvic floor muscles if you use them. So you can squeeze and squeeze and squeeze around your partner. Give them a good workout, because any exercise that you get to your pelvic floor muscles increases the circulation in the area, it makes the tissues a little bit more supple, and it keeps you functioning well. So that's important. Now I'm running out of time.
So how often should we be engaging our pelvic floor muscles each day?
Right. You should be engaging your pelvic floor muscles every time you do anything that increases gravity. Every time you do like that, you should pull up your muscles. If you cough, even more so. When you lift the milk out of the fridge, when you pick up your supermarket shopping, when you push that chair in underneath the table or carry it to the other side of the room, when you think about it, squeeze them up. Because like any muscle, if you don't use them, you will lose them. You'll lose the function. If the more you squeeze them, the more you tighten them, the more they will stay up here in your mind and down there strength-wise.
And so, how do you know you're doing it properly?
How do you know? That's a good question. Now, I'm just going to run you through this with my parting gesture. We're all going to do a little film for it. So put your books and things down so you've got two spare hands. Pelvic floor muscles run from the back of the pubic bone down around the sides of the urethra, which is the first opening to your bladder, which is in front of the vagina. They run down the sides of that, and then the bowel behind, they run back behind that. So from the back of the pubic bone, around the pelvic openings, looping around the back of the bowel, like a U-shape. So if you put your hands around your hips, and if you roll your hips forward so that you're sitting very much over the vagina, knees apart a little bit comfortably. Now, wiggle your hips side to side. You should be able to feel where the vagina is. Some idea?
Yeah.
Yep? Okay. Put one hand on the pubic bone at the front. It's quite low, isn't it, when you're sitting down, so it disappears between your legs. And then feel where the tailbone is at the back, which is not touching the chair. Alright, now we're sitting very squarely over our pelvis at the moment. So that U shape is coming from the back of that pubic bone, down, around either side of the vagina and looping around the back of the bowel. Now over the top of that U shape, I want you to remain, put your hands back on your hips now, but stay sitting nice and upright. Over that U shape, I want you to imagine a clock face. Put the 12 o'clock at the pubic bone at the front, the 6 o'clock at the back passage, and on either side of the vagina, the 9 and the 3. Alright, so you've got a picture of that clock in your head. Alright, now we'll start at the back and we'll work forwards. Imagine that you have wind and you're trying to tighten up inside the back passage to hold onto it. Don't tighten your buttocks, they're not part of your pelvic floor. Squeeze up inside the back passage, and it's the 6 o'clock on our clock that we're pulling in and up and slightly forward. It's always easier if you imagine a situation when you're trying to find that back passage. Fine? So, put yourself in a lift with terrible sense of wind. Try to hold on to it with a whole lot of people in there. Right? They usually spring in then. And let it go. Alright, now, that's the external anal sphincter and that loop of muscle that's going around the back of the bowel, which when you tighten up, brings the back passage forward enough to put a little angle in it. And that's what helps keep your stool contents up higher and not coming down right to the anus at the bottom. particularly when you cough and sneeze. So if you squeeze up those muscles and pull up inside the back passage and cough, then if you have anything up higher, it will stay up high and not get pushed down. Okay, now that's the 6 o'clock. You're sitting forward. On either side of the vagina is that 9 or 3 on the clock. This time I want you to squeeze in sideways. Pull that 9 and 3 into the middle of the clock face. Squeeze the side balls of the vagina in and slightly up. You can draw your vagina up towards the seat of the chair. And then let go. And what you should feel is that your vagina is lifting slightly off the chair. And across the front of your tummy here, the deep abdominal muscles are engaging. It's like a big smile right across the lower part of your tummy. And at the same time, your deep back muscles are engaging. If you're not concentrating so hard on the pelvic floor that you manage to think about that, they all work together. Now, the 9 and the 3, the front part of that pelvic floor, is responsible for supporting the front wall of the vagina and your bladder. So when you have urge control issues with your bladder, it's the front part that you're going to focus on. We're going to squeeze that 9 and 3 in and up and pull up and hold it so tight that you think you're going to burst. And keep the pressure on until you feel the urge starting to come. If you're trying to hold on to wind, you're going to squeeze up inside the back passage for all the work. Squeeze it up and try and hold on there. You need to be able to hold for good function. You need at least 10 to 15 seconds hold without holding your breath. So you've got to be able to keep breathing and holding these muscles. If you can't do that, if you can't hold for 10 seconds and do 8 to 10 of those in a row, your muscles aren't strong enough. So if that's the case, you need to be doing this, I think, 3 times a day, and you need to work out how long you can hold, and then you need to build on it until you've got muscles that have got enough strength and enough holding power to give you urge control and brace your own confidence. Now let's see how long you can hold. Let's try again. We'll draw in the 6 and the 9 and 3, the whole lot all together, and I'll get you to count aloud with a small breath between each number. So we're going to do a 1 and 2 and 3, and that breath is up here, it's not down here, because as soon as it comes down here, you're the ostropelvic floor. So it's a high breath. Alright, if your hands are on the front of your tummy, you'll feel those deep abdominal muscles engaging, that tightness just in on the inside of your hip bones. Okay, so squeezing in and up, the 9, the 3, and the 6, count with me. 1 and 2 and 3. Don't let go, keep counting. 5, 6. If you lost it, stop counting. Keep counting if you still got it. 10, you can let go. Feel it release. Okay, now what some of you will find is they just disappeared somewhere. You might have got 2, 3, 4, and they just couldn't hold any longer. And so you're going to have to work at that. Hold them for 3 seconds and then try and push it to 4. Hold it for 4 seconds, try and push it to 5. You need endurance, you need something to hold on with. And if you just use that general rule of thumb of holding for 10 repetitions, there are variations of exercises that I can't prescribe for you now, it's very generalised. But if you can do that 3 times a day until you can do 10 lots of 10, then your muscles won't be in such bad shape. Use that clock face, if it works for you, to help guide your effort. Because when you don't have a lot of sensation, you need to get a visual picture of what you're doing. Right? You may not feel anything in the vagina when you're doing that. But if you're thinking 9 and 3, 9 and 3, and your tummy's coming in here, not on purpose, but stuff happening, then you can be pretty sure that you're getting a pelvic floor contraction. When you go home, not here while we're sitting, you can put 2 fingers in the vagina and feel those muscles. Feel them tightening around your fingers. And that is also, you know, if you're poor on sensation, you're not sure what's happening, if you can feel them working, any extra feedback that you can get is helpful in helping you increase your muscle strength. If you're not comfortable putting your fingers in the vagina, then just go with that visual picture. 9 and 3, in at the front, pull up for bladder control, squeezing up around the back for your bowel, and hold them for as long as you can. Now, you can do that standing at the sink. You can do it while you're sitting here talking to me. You can do it while you're on the phone to somebody. The more the better. But if your muscles are weak, you need to put some time in specifically to do a set of exercises where you do hold for a certain number of seconds, you do a certain number of repetitions at maximum strength, and you do that 3 times a day until you can get up to that 10 watts of 10. If you're really struggling with it, there are lots of women's health physios around. There are heaps of us now. There is a register. Find somebody close to you and get some help. But don't ignore it as long as it's too hard, because if it's too hard, then you're going to be backwards and forwards to the supermarket buying an increasing number of pads. Okay, there are also other things that can help you. Any questions about that pelvic floor, by the way? 10 lots of 10. Yes, if you can get to 10 lots of 10 once a day is enough. If you can't get a 10 second hold, then do it 3 times a day until you can. That's okay. Your formal exercise.
Right.
And then you use your muscles as much as possible.
Right.
Squeeze them up at every opportunity. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're doing anything, think, can I hold these muscles tight while I'm browsing through these books over here? Or can I hold them tight while I'm talking to my friend on the phone? Can I cough without leaking if I pull up just before I cough? You've got to use them. The more you use them, the more comfortable you are, and the more you manage what you do. Okay? Now, if anybody wants more information, the Continence Foundation is a national organisation. They have a helpline. The number is 1-800-330-0066. It's a free call. They can give you advice on the phone. If you're looking for somebody to see on an individual basis, they can tell you who's closest to you. They can also give you advice over the phone if you have a specific question. If you join the Continence Foundation, they send out a newsletter work as well. And they also have lots of pamphlets with varying topics, huge number of topics. Constipation, talking about exercises for women, pelvic floor exercises for men, good healthy bowel and bladder habits. Probably would be a good idea to have a range of them here actually. All you need to do is bring them and they will send them to you in the box. The other one too is the Australian Physiotherapy Association. They also have a register of confidence and women's health physios if you want to meet somebody specifically. Do go to somebody in your area, you don't have to travel across town. It's got to be easy enough for you to access if you do want to do something on a one-to-one basis and convenient for you as well. It shouldn't be an extra stress in your life. You don't need a referral unless you're on the Implanted Primary Care Scheme, which is a care plan. And I would imagine that if you've had cancer and this is the result of that treatment, if you don't have private health insurance, because most physios work on private health insurance, but they also accept the Enhanced Primary Care Scheme, which is a government rebate. They give you a Medicare number and they'll give you 5 visits if you haven't used it for something else. So the money is an issue. There are ways around it. And a lot of physios will be happy to bulk bill so that you get $50 back on each visit from the Enhanced Primary Care. But your GP needs to do a care plan and set it up first. And you need to take that piece of paper with you to the practitioner of that choice. Okay. Good. And private health insurance also covers not quite as much. Come back on the physio as well, so.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good thinking. Thank you very much.
You're
very important.
Hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to Brecan Podcasts or browse existing podcasts by visiting www.brecan.org.au.